1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to another edition of In Touch with Kale and Cormier. Ken Kale, Jane Cormier. Jane, great to see you again.
Always good to see you, Ken. How are you today?
I am doing great. Great. And glad you came back for more.
Always.
Always a lot of fun. And I think this is our third official show together.
Oh, my God. That makes us legit now, you know.
And they said it wouldn't last. Our guest today, in studio, live and in living color, here on WKXL is Barbara Comtois. Did I say it right?
Perfect.
Okay. Of Barnstead, Republican member of the House of Representatives, and a member for how long, Barbara?
This is my third term. I was elected in 2016, and I've been on the Environmental and Agriculture Committee since day one.
So what initially inspired you to run?
I wanted a better future for my children. You know, if I'm not willing to fight for their future, then I don't have any right to complain.
Well
Mama
said.
Mama Bear.
Yeah.
Mama Bear.
I am. Don't mess with my kids.
And I'm sure there are many men and women in the legislature right now that ran for the same reasons, you know, and certainly good reasons to run and be involved.
Citizen legislature,
yeah.
Right?
I was even a state rep for a couple of years.
You were? When were you
congratulations.
A state rep?
I was there when Craig Benson was governor.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't know that, Ken.
I ran, and here's the reason I ran. In fact, it was a Democratic friend of mine, a great Democrat, Frank Sullivan, the late Frank Sullivan from Manchester. We were good friends. We did a lot of games on the radio together. And he was a retired school teacher at the time, so he wanted to run and be on the education committee because he had been in education for many, many years.
Right.
So, but his real reason for running was to forward the possibility of having a casino in the state of New Hampshire.
Okay.
You know, something that now Senator D'Alessandro has been pushing for about 25 years. I don't think it's ever going to come to fruition. But I was on his side in this issue.
Okay.
And it's really, to be honest, the only reason I ran.
Is that right?
Was for that. Obviously, it didn't do any good in my case. I did my best. But anyway, one year they came within one vote of passing the casino
close,
bill.
Really?
Yeah, it really did.
Okay.
So that's the reason I ran. I ran 2 years, but I had three other jobs at the time.
Yeah.
So I have to say that it was great. It was a great experience, but I didn't feel I was being fair to my constituents because I really couldn't spend the time I needed.
Right, or that you really would want to do. The truth is if you don't have, and there are a lot of retired folks, you know, that serve, or people that don't have to work, you know, that own businesses that they run that allows them that.
Sure,
But if you're a working person,
it
is a challenge to do it. When I was 12 to 14?
I believe so.
For Belknap District, Alton was basically Alton and Gilmanton, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was crazy. I worked part-time teaching, and, you know, we went on the road, too, talking to communities about issues that they were facing. So, it can be all-consuming.
It can be. It can be certainly more than a full-time job in itself.
Absolutely.
And I had three other sort of part-time jobs at the time. So, so I really couldn't be – it wasn't fair to the constituents. So one term was all, but – maybe when I get older, I'll try it again.
You should. Well, I would love to try it again. I'm going to be trying it again at some point. I know, Barbara, you have a full-time job, and you still work there. You still serve.
Sure. I mean, I work full-time. My employer is very flexible with me
so that
he understands. I was right up front with him that, my committee work specifically is the most important to me because that's really where all the work gets done. The voting, sessions are fine, but it's the nitty-gritty of the bills and making sure they come out of the committee correctly. And I have such a great committee. We work really well together. We almost come out, 99% of our bills come out 100% bipartisan.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So, there's very few that come down on party lines, so we work really, really hard. And I'm also a part-time farmer, or was, not so much anymore. My youngest is taking that over. And but Barnstead is a hugely agricultural district, yeah, as is Belknap County, and it really is my passion. And so there are only two farmers on the entire committee this term.
Really, just two? Wow. Real full-time farmers, yeah.
And so it's scary. And over the past few terms I've been on there, the most there's ever been is three. Mm-hmm. And we come at things from a little bit of a different angle than most people. And everyone may look at one thing one way, but when it comes to farming, you really have to broaden your horizons. And it's a whole new education.
Yeah,
for folks
you
to
said
understand.
Food, this is important for New Hampshire food security, this stuff.
Oh, food security is right, because we can only feed 4 to 6% of our population right now.
That's crazy.
I put in a bill last year, and we created a study committee out of it to discuss meat processing, because there are only 4 USDA meat processing facilities in New Hampshire.
Wow.
And in the entire U.S., there are 5 meatpacking facilities that process 80% of our meat.
Oh,
mm. And, you know, with the droughts and everything going on out west, making sure that we can have our own farms want to expand, but they can't.
Right.
So it's really important for this issue to be discussed. And
Good.
So what other bills have you been discussing in the world of agriculture?
Well, always is the raw milk bills. And it looks like somebody else put in a new bill this year. I don't know what the language is. We're just seeing titles coming out. But the entire country looks to New Hampshire at their farming bills, because we have some of the best farming bills for farmers in the nation. And we're always trying to improve on that and make it better for people to be able to farm and grow their own food and educate people. We have the UNH Extension, which is great. Yeah. The Department of Agriculture is great. I mean, everyone seems to work together. And, you know, the Farm Bureau works with folks. So we're very, very fortunate in New Hampshire.
Oh, absolutely so. And, you know, farmers, I think, are so, no matter whether it's in New Hampshire or anywhere else, very much underappreciated.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of the only businesses where you buy retail and sell wholesale.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, you know what? It's because our whole society just thinks that food grows in the food stores, right? We're so spoiled. Everything you want is on those shelves. Who's stopping to really think that that had to be produced by farmers?
Well, it's not only that. Is that folks don't even realize that I had a nephew one time come up, and we had collected eggs from the chickens, and he refused to eat the eggs because the yolks were too yellow.
Oh, mamma mia.
And it's like, so where does milk come from? The grocery store is what people think. Yeah. We have lost touch with where our food actually comes from. And it's really important to get back to that.
Right.
And the sad part is, as you pointed out, is that there is such a very slim margin of profit that we have lost many farms in New Hampshire over the years.
Especially in the dairy industry.
Yeah.
There are fewer and fewer dairy farms every year.
And they just can't make it, right?
Well, not only that, is that the federal government regulates their pricing, the milk prices.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's great.
With the raw milk industry, it's a different animal, but they are only allowed to sell it.
So the raw milk does not fall under the milk that's like a pasteurized product.
Correct. Although the farmers can only sell 20 gallons of raw milk per day.
Right. I know that it was lower. Yeah, interesting. You know, you have to wonder. We do have a good number of farms, from what I understand, though, that are like micro farmers.
Oh, micro farms. Yeah, there's over 4,000 farms, and they could be anywhere from, you know, a tree farm to a garlic farm to a flower farm to your traditional farm, you know.
Yeah, we got to do better than that, though, huh? We have to do better with our farms. Give them more autonomy.
Yes, and we need to let them expand. They want to, you know, the farmers, I've talked to 3 farmers just in Barnstead, and they want to expand their animal production, but they can't.
Right, because they can't process the meat.
Correct.
Crazy.
Wow. We're learning a lot today.
Absolutely.
Jane, as that's what this program is all about.
Hopefully with a smile.
Try to educate the masses.
Yes.
And Barbara Comtois is with us, Republican member of the New Hampshire House of Representatives. And the rumor is that you get along with some of the Democrats as well.
I do. Well, you know, just be kind and respectful to each other and you'll get along.
Right.
But you're not a member of the Legislative Beer Caucus.
I am not.
No, okay.
Although my chair is.
Your chair is?
Yes, of the Environmental and Agricultural Committee.
And
yes.
That would be?
Representative Howard Pearl.
Yes, Mr. Pearl has been on my other show, Feldis and Kale. He's been on with us, so there you go. But no, it's so important to this state, the farming industry.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, as Barbara pointed out, we've lost a lot of dairy farms over the years. I think it's down to 96 dairy farms now.
Yeah, it's less than 100.
Yeah, in the state of New Hampshire. And at one time, I mean, there might have been close to like 400. Yeah.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was that big a cut. It's like almost 75%.
Yeah, and boy, you think, I mean, to me, you know, you look at the grocery store, and I'm in a lot of grocery stores, and the milk is such a bargain, really. When you look at a gallon of milk, I mean, it's not that much different price-wise than it was any number of years ago. And unfortunately, that's because it is controlled, and the milk producers don't really have any control over, you know, what they're going to get for it.
Right.
And unfortunately, the profit margin is very, very slim.
Yeah. You know, Barbara, I have a question for you. You may or may not be able to answer it, but I've been trying to delve into it a little bit more because I know the word doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. So organic. Okay. And I'm going crazy because you know what? I'll tell you the story. I love nuts. I love any kind of nut that you could put in front of me. I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, so I snack on nuts. I try to stay away from all the other, you know, bad stuff for us because I'm a snacker. I like to snack. I like to eat. I like to cook. I like to shop. You name it. Food. I love. But nuts, I really like. So I said, okay, I'm going to go look this up. You know, I wonder if they have any pesticides or something. Well, like, I couldn't believe what I was reading. I was horrified that, like, walnuts have the highest density of pesticides of just about any food you would eat. Because evidently the bug situation with them is so, they have so many things that they have to kill to keep the nuts growing, you know, the way that we eat them, that they're covered in pesticides. And evidently there's nothing you can do with them. You can't wash them. You can't buy the unshelled walnuts. And this is for any nut. Almonds through the roof with pesticides, right? So I'm thinking to myself, this really stinks. You know, I can't find anything in the stores that say non-GMO. I'll see organic. But doesn't organic just means that, what does it mean?
It means, so one would think that organic meant no pesticides.
Right.
That is not true.
I didn't think so. Okay.
So there are organic approved pesticides.
Oh.
So, it depends. Is it 100% organic? Is it 95% organic? So there's that little bit of a leeway.
They don't have to show you that either, right?
Right. So.
So what do I do?
Well, the question is, so I always tell people, and when I first got into farming, and I thought I was, like, pretty smart, I've told you that before and realized I didn't know anything, I called up the UNH Extension at one point and was going to use a certain organic pesticide because I'm going to feed my family, and I want to make sure they're getting the best thing. And some of the things that in organic pesticides are the synthetic is actually less harmful to your body.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So, just think of arsenic. That's organic.
Right, it is organic, and it's pretty nasty.
Yes. I'm just going to throw that one out there.
But it's organic.
Okay, so now you've just blown my whole. So you're saying that.
And the thing is that. But the best way to buy your food is go to your farmer's market, go to your local farmer, and ask them what they're putting on their food, spraying.
But there's no nut growers around New Hampshire. You know, where am I going to find them? I'm going online now, and I'm looking everywhere trying to find, you know, a nut that would talk about the pesticides. I haven't found it yet.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe you find a walnut farmer out in California, and you contact them.
Wowie zowie. Can you imagine having to do that?
Really?
Well, if you really want to know what's on your food or in your food, you need to talk to the farmer.
Right.
Because they're the only one that can tell you.
Yeah.
And the good part of it is we do have quite a few farmers markets here in the state of New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every little community has them. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it truly is. Yeah. I know the one in Concord is very successful that they have on Saturday mornings, which is a terrific thing.
Absolutely. And you can find some really interesting things there every week.
Oh, you can. And the thing is, the other question is really, when you're looking at organic, is it coming, you know, 5,000 miles versus something that's not organic that's only 100 miles away? Which one actually has more nutritional value?
Right.
Because you really need to look at that aspect of it, too.
You're right. I'm going to have to figure out this pickle because I'm missing. I don't have any nuts in my house right now. It's like the first time in 2 years. You know, pistachios. What I do is I buy the highest grade nut, you know, like the most expensive, and I'll put them together. I put them in a bag. You know, a Ziploc bag, all the nuts together. And then I just take a handful out when I want to, you know, have a snack.
Right.
And I really like it. So I'm going to figure that out. That's a big one for
me. We'll have to get to the bottom of this. Really.
A new project.
Yes. You're listening to In Touch with Kale and Cormier, Ken Kale, Jane Cormier. Our guest today is Barbara Comtois of Barnstead. And so, Barbara, were you born into the farming business?
I never planted anything until the year 2000.
2000?
Wow, that late? I didn't know that.
I never planted. Yeah, I mean, we bought the land, and we're going to become farmers, and I had never even dug in the dirt until that point.
So how does that all come about? How do you decide? I probably didn't do it overnight, but how do you decide to become farmers?
Well, I guess becoming a farmer is more of a lifestyle, and it's a way of life, and it just kind of evolved. Had two boys, wanted to raise them in the best environment possible that we could, and so we started with raspberries and some Christmas trees, and I learned about planting with J roots and how to plant the Christmas tree, and you had to make sure this root was that way, and then we got into hydroponics in 2004. And
so what does that mean exactly?
Growing without soil. And people told me I was crazy that only people in England did it. I heard the stories left and right. No one does that in New Hampshire. No one does it outside. You must do this. And I'm like, nope. And it's like, don't tell me I can't do something because I'm definitely going to prove you wrong.
There you go. So you've been in the farming business now for a little over 20 years?
Correct.
Yeah. So how has it changed over those 20 years?
Like you said, you know, for a while there, it was much easier to sell our product to different places. And then the more regulations came in and it made it harder and harder for the smaller farm. And especially at the time when we were doing hydroponics meant that our water and everything, it was a whole different animal and nobody really knew how to address it. We couldn't declare ourselves organic. We couldn't declare ourselves certain things because you can only be organic if you're growing in soil.
Oh, my gosh.
At the time.
Wow.
Okay.
I think that has evolved now into hydroponics because people were complaining that, you know, how come you can't be organic if you're in hydroponics?
Yeah, that's
but,
weird.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's been a huge learning curve for me. And like I said, I never realized how many regulations are involved in farming. And so I look at farmers that around, and they got to be some of the smartest people out there because they deal with a lot more than just the regular folk.
Yeah, absolutely. They're dealing with all kinds of things all at the same time.
And you find the regulations much too restrictive, really.
To a point.
Yeah.
I mean, some are necessary. I won't say that they're all necessary, but some of them are necessary. I like the fact that we have to have a pesticide license in the state because what it really does is teaches you on how to apply, how much to apply, And even if you're an organic farmer, you're supposed to have your pesticide license mm-hmm. to sell your product because you're spraying something on the food, and people need to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And you need to protect the people around and anyone coming onto the farm. So there are certain regulations that are important. Then there's some that are just right now with the meat processing. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, because whatever we do, we have to be cognizant of food safety.
Right.
And the public. But at the same time, we need to let farms grow so that we can feed more people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's got to be a balance somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Our guest on this edition of In Touch with Kaylin Cormier is Barbara Comtois, and she is a representative, state representative in her third term from Barnstead. We'll take a quick break. In Touch with Kaylin Cormier continues on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back. It's In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. And I'm Ken Kale. She's Jane Cormier. Barbara Comtois is with us from Barnstead. And we're talking a little bit about the legislature and about farming as well.
Very interesting.
It is.
What are some other bills? Now, you had some other bills with regard to, vaccines or mandates or something?
Well, mostly anti-discrimination bills, basically, is what they are. Because there's a lot of information out there, but, you know, we have, in this country, set apart people, and we're discriminating against people and putting fear in people's, and we're pitting, again, the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated, people that wear a mask versus unmasked, you know, and we're pitting people against each other, and folks in different areas are asking, you know, have you been vaccinated, have you not, but that's actually against state law.
Right.
You cannot ask that question.
Right. It's all privacy information.
It absolutely is. You know, and there's a discussion about the vaccine registry. Is it an opt-in or an opt-out? And things like
that. And
that
discussion's going on right now, from what I understand, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
And what would be the difference between an opt-in and an opt-out?
Well, an opt-in would mean that you would tell the doctor or whoever that you wanted to be in the vaccine registry.
Mm-hmm.
An opt-out means you have to tell them that they automatically put you in and you have to go
elsewhere
to tell them you want out.
Right. So there is a little trick, right, you know, in some parts of the legislation world, because the opt-ins, right, and the opt-outs are two different things, and one is much more difficult than the other, right? If you have to opt out, there is a step that you have to take that is a little bit more arduous to a person than the other. But nobody stops to think about that because that's not really explained really well. So opting in is something you make that choice to do.
Right, and that should be a discussion between you and your doctor.
Right.
Your medical provider.
Yeah, if that's privileged information, private information, we shouldn't be rewriting, I think, the definition of what all of that means, because we are beset by this challenge called COVID. There's just better ways to do it. So you've put in a bill to address exactly what part of that.
So. So my bill is to say that you can't be discriminated from entering a public place, whether you have a vaccine or not.
Right.
And then there's a couple of places in statute that say that. So we want to make sure that everyone has equal access.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, because what's happening is during the beginning of COVID, there were folks that had shopped at a small grocery store for over 20 years. And because they couldn't, of medical conditions, the store would no longer let them shop there.
Right.
20-year customer. I mean, so we were pitting neighbor against neighbor.
Yeah, and we still are. Yeah.
That is correct.
So these let's say it's a restaurant, or, you know, and I'm not even sure if this is really an issue in New Hampshire, but it is in New York and big cities where they're asking for verification that you've had the vaccination, right? Your card or something. I don't understand how the federal HIPAA laws allow that. How does that happen?
Because they've waived them.
Who's waived them?
The federal government. And now OSHA is writing rules.
Yeah, it's always the rules, isn't it?
Right. So what happens is laws get passed, and then the departments write the rules. Mm-hmm. And therein lies, so no matter what the legislative intent may be, that's what's going on with the Department of Health and Human Services right now about the vaccine registry, mm-hmm. is they got the vaccine registry, now they're trying to write the rules. Right. Well, now they have to have public hearings.
Right.
And so therein lies the issue, and people are coming out. And
they should. And again, it's always the educational aspect for me, for folks to understand that the administrative state is not an elected portion of our government. And so you have legislators to get out there and, you know, hit the pavement to make your voices heard, to make sure they vote the way you want. That's what a republic does. But when you start to see what is on the books for laws being subverted in the closed room, let's make the rules mentality, that's where we lose our rights. And nobody necessarily knows it's happening. Fortunately for this one, people now know it's happening. So it's DHS, isn't it?
Right.
That's
right.
Trying to write the rules to subvert what is already on the books legally. And that's a big, bad no-no. We should never allow that to happen.
Now, Barbara, are you planning to run for re-election in 2022? I mean, can you make an announcement here on In Touch with Kaylin Cormier?
2022 is a long ways off.
No, oh, yeah. Boy, she sounds like a typical politician, doesn't she?
Oh, no.
It's a long way off.
Yeah. It is a long ways
you
off.
You just killed me.
But the thing is we don't know. I mean, I don't even know what my district is going to look like. We have redistricting coming down the pike. And, you know, so for folks to say, oh, I'm going to run.
Yeah,
and
you don't even know
what your district is going to look like right now.
That's true.
I tried to get Trump to announce his candidacy on a show I did a number of years ago. He wouldn't do it. He did it a month later.
Get out.
But he wouldn't. He had a perfect chance on a show I used to host.
Oh, my goodness.
On another frequency.
Shame on him.
Yeah.
How dare he.
So I didn't expect him to.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe, you know, Barbara Comtois could, announce here on In Touch, but we won't hold your feet to the fire.
No, well, the county keeps me busy. My county duties, which most people don't realize.
They don't know anything about that side, probably.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about that side.
Well, every state rep is also a part of the delegation for each county, mm-hmm. and in Belknap we have a very small delegation of 18 at the moment. We don't know if that's going to grow or not. With the redistricting, and it seems to be a contentious delegation and has been since 2010. As a matter of fact, we have formed a special investigative committee to look into the doings of the commissioners in the administration.
The doings.
Yes.
That sounds interesting,
yes,
doesn't it? Huh?
Absolutely.
The doings. Let's hear more about the doings.
it's crazy because people don't, they think they probably, and who's going to tell them, right? That's why we're doing this show. It's great. So they go every once a week or maybe twice a week to vote on the bills that were passed. But the rep has committee work that actually brings those bills forward, right, to be voted on. But they also, as part of their county, have meetings and all kinds of things that have to be taken care of within the county. So it's really like at least a trifecta of duties.
Right, right. Well, it is the delegation that approves the county budget
and
sets that tax rate.
Right, which is hugely important for the taxpayer.
You know, and how things are spent at the county level and where you know. So we directly, that is where we directly can affect your tax rate.
Right.
I mean, not so much at the state level. I mean, obviously bills, but there's 400 of us.
Right.
But it is the county delegation where you actually have a lot of impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we are one of the few counties that have a ski area also in our purview that is owned by the county, which is Gunstock.
Right.
So we also elect the commissioners for that and everything else. Yeah. So
a lot of work. And, you know, if people pay attention to the county, they probably learn more about how government works or doesn't work, you know, because the county stuff is really important in the state of New Hampshire.
Do all of the reps in Belknap County get involved in the county business?
All 18.
All 18.
And that's always been the way, at least for as long as we've been looking around, 210.
Right. And one of the bills they were put into the House a few years ago was they were trying to increase the pay for a delegation meeting at the county level because other counties couldn't get the reps to show up to even get a quorum. Not in, you know, not in Belknap.
Not in Belknap. No.
We actually cut our meeting rate.
Yes.
Because we were making cuts and we wanted to show the taxpayers and the folks at the county level that we were willing to take a cut ourselves.
Right.
So we actually cut our pay.
Yeah. You're really cheap pay. Like pennies on the dollar pay.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you do get free tolls, right?
Free tolls.
Right. Right.
She gets something there, Barbara.
Except I don't use them anymore.
Yeah.
I go north.
There you go. Barbara Comtois is our guest from Barnstead, state representative, and so much more. It's In Touch with Kale and Cormier here on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back to In Touch with Kale and Cormier. And we're in touch today with Barbara Comtois of Barnstead, a Republican member of the New Hampshire House of Representatives. The Republicans have the majority in the House and the majority in the Senate right now. We have a Republican governor. Do you see, right now, it's what is the margin in the House now?
It's very slim.
Very slim, yeah, very slim.
Very slim.
And it's a little bit larger in the Senate, isn't it, than it is comparatively in the House. But anyway.
But the executive council is counting. It's 4-1.
4-1, yeah, 4-1. So do you see those margins getting larger in 2022?
I honestly don't know.
Okay, well, that's a fair answer.
I think they will.
I think they will as well. In fact, I think after what's gone on over the last 8 months, and I know it's different levels. I know we're talking apples and oranges, but you know, so many people, you know, are not happy with what's going on right now in Washington and beyond.
Yep.
That they see a D on that ballot, a Democrat next time around.
Yeah.
If they're not really in tune. So much. I mean, there are people who follow state government very closely, but I don't think the majority do.
Right.
I don't think the majority do. Do you, Barbara?
I think more and more people are getting involved and more and more young people are really getting involved.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Yeah.
And if you just look at the special election down in Bedford, what just happened.
Yeah.
But they fell asleep at the wheel on that one. The word is, anyway.
Well, that's what the word is. But really, nobody really knows the answer, and a lot of money was poured into a $100 a year race. I mean,
right, but that was a big one. Why don't we tell the folks what we're talking about?
Okay, so in Bedford, the Democrat won over a Republican in a staunchly Republican district.
Right.
So,
everybody's sort of really freaked out by that because it was always a stronghold in Bedford.
Yeah. So when you mentioned $100, that's the salary of a state rep.
Per year.
And so how much money did they put into a race that pays the winner $100?
I am not sure. I didn't go on and look at the numbers, but I heard it was a lot.
Wow. I'm shocked with that one. A lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the truth is they still had such a... It must be because some of the Republicans on that are leaning left that they would put the money in for Dem to win there. Because if they were, Republican platform Republicans that, try to stay right of center, it wouldn't have mattered. Why would they have thrown that money away to throw a Dem in there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but the person that was running was a former state rep, Linda Camerata. So... Very good on the issues. Very nice person, in general, just a great person. Very concerned about the constituency and everything else. So yes, it was quite the shock, even though it was a 37 vote difference.
They
did a recount.
They did a recount already.
Mm-hmm.
But what a dichotomy it is in this state, isn't it? You have the Washington delegation, which is all Democrat. And on the local level, you have a Republican governor, a majority in the House, and a majority in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain that? I mean...
You can explain it, but it's not anything anybody wants to hear. The sad truth is that enigma is going to continue here in New Hampshire until they start to, wear their big boy pants as far as voting rights. because, you know, this whole discussion that we have of allowing people that don't live in New Hampshire but go to school here in New Hampshire vote is why the federal elections, I think, turn left with enough votes, because they're only voting at the top of the ballot. These, you know, a large college delegation group, right?
Yeah.
And they are bussed in. I know people do not believe that, but I remember holding signs for the couple of years that I ran and seeing colleges bring busloads of students in to vote. And these students don't live in New Hampshire, you know, they're not breaking the law, because the law says that if you go to school here, you could vote here,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But they're not, in essence, understanding what New Hampshire is all about. And they're told to, you know, vote just the top ones, leave the bottom, you know, bottoms of the voting ballot.
Yeah.
And that's why we win locally, I think. I mean, that's, you know, how else can you, we've been seeing this now for decades. How does this manifest if that's not what's happening? If they're coming in and voting Democrat straight
right.
down the ballot,
yeah.
how are we filling up these House and you know, these other spots?
To with me, Republicans, it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
To me, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So speaking of voters' rights, and they've really, I think since 2020, they've become a lot more liberal around the country. But we're trying to hold fast here in New Hampshire, aren't we? We're trying to make, you know, the elections as normal as they once were.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Bill Gardner's done a great job as Secretary
it's
of State.
It's so difficult with the atmosphere out there to try to do the right thing anymore. I mean, how can anybody argue with what is it, residency and
domicile?
Domicile.
Mm. Right.
It's such a, it just makes sense.
Well, if we, you know, there are folks that really understand the constitutional aspect of all of this. And if we really delved into it, we would probably get to the correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not my area of expertise.
Right. Well.
But, and the other thing is, you know, let's take the first in the nation primary. I mean, we do it really well here.
Yeah.
But they want to take it away. They're every 4 years, they're same fighting thing. To taking it away from us.
Right.
Why? You know, it matters. I mean, because folks that don't have a lot of money can be heard in New Hampshire.
Right.
And if it went to a different state,
that's not going to happen.
They would be silenced.
Right.
And then you really wouldn't have a choice. I think that the primaries is the only, one of the only voting parts of the, you really have a choice and get to decide who you really want.
Yeah, to at least see who's up
right.
close and personal, what's out there.
Right.
And be able to get in to talk to them. And you, this is the only state that you can actually meet every single person that comes in from the feds to run for an office.
Yeah. And
that's
then,
pretty cool.
And then you have the Iowa caucuses before that.
Yeah.
And we don't even really know who won the Iowa caucuses the last time around at this point.
Still. But
we really don't. I mean, I couldn't tell you anyway.
Yeah.
And we saw where our current president landed in the New Hampshire primary, which was fifth, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know? But I hope New Hampshire, and I think Bill Gardner will make sure this is the case, and the legislature as well, that we don't have, you know, these drop boxes everywhere around
oh
the state
gosh.
or make, you know, absentee balloting an easy thing to do.
Crazy.
Because if you continue to do that around the rest mm-hmm. of the country, there's always going to be suspicion.
Of course.
About the outcome of elections.
There's just no integrity
presidential
of the vote.
And otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got to yeah. fight for the integrity of the vote.
The thing is people have to want to go to vote. It's a privilege for us to vote.
Right.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's people say it's a right, and I've had this discussion, but it really is a privilege.
It is a privilege. But you know what? The whole dialogue has been so carefully crafted through the last 20 years, maybe more, probably more, to make people not understand what the republic works, how it works, right? What it is, how it works. And it's tied to the integrity of the vote, you know, here in this state. Because if we don't understand that we are the ones that are going to determine who's sitting there, and we have to be an active part of the republic process, right?
Right.
We just go with the majority wins idea. which is what
which
many
is
would
mob
love.
Rule. It's mob rule.
It's mob rule, and it is not what we are supposed to be having here in this country.
No.
We are not a democracy. We are a republic. Period.
Right. Which makes us great. Obviously. That's what differentiates us from the rest of the world.
Of course.
You're listening to In Touch with Kale and Cormier here on 103.9 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Barbara Comtois is with us, state representative from Barnstead. We'll take a quick break and then wrap things up here on Kale and Cormier In Touch on WKXL. 103.9 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Welcome back to In Touch with Kale and Cormier. Our third edition of this highly rated radio program. The ratings are through the roof.
We are legit.
Yes. Wow. And Barbara Comtois is with us, state representative and farmer from Barnstead. What's the name of your firm?
Sticks and Stones.
Sticks and Stones Farm.
Sticks and Stones may break my bone, but nails will never. Is that what you came up with?
No, it's because we have a lot of sticks and stones. Ask my son, who's trying to get a field done.
I see.
He's been out there for 3 months picking stones out of a field.
Yes, big stones, from what I understand.
Yes.
So where are you located in Barnstead?
Center Barnstead, actually.
Oh, Center Barnstead.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Center Barnstead.
Barnstead is 46 square miles. We're quite a large town.
Yeah.
With a small population.
How many acres do you have?
93.
Yes.
Now, do you do any direct selling to people from your farm? I mean, I know so many have farm stands and what have you.
But we used to. Yeah. Right now, we're revamping. Like I said, my youngest is taking it over. I just don't have the time between the legislature and working full time. So I'm just helping him fulfill the dream and of the farm.
Well, that is great.
Yeah.
And it's something he wants to do.
It is, and I'm thrilled.
Which is terrific.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes,
great.
Absolutely.
You know, totally off topic. I just want to bring up the fact that I never knew you were so famous, Ken Kale. And you know,
infamous,
how,
maybe.
You, no,
I don't know
famous.
About famous.
You are famous. You are listed on that restaurant. What is that restaurant called?
No, the Red Arrow.
Red Arrow,
Red Arrow
Diner.
Yeah.
I saw your name on the you know, the placard that has all the names of famous people that ate here, and I'm like, oh my God, Ken is on this. That's awesome.
Me and Adam Sandler and
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, you're
John
in good
Clayton and you know all
oh,
of them.
He's an awesome
people.
Company when
that's
you read the
awesome.
Names and then Ken Kale. See that?
Yeah, and then Ken Kale.
That's
yes,
right.
Yeah.
Well, no,
I'm surprised they haven't been taken off. You know?
Huh?
Anytime I go in there, I check to see if it's still there.
No, it's not going anywhere. I think that's awesome.
Hey, so have any of you looked at our new the new logo for New Hampshire on all the state sites?
No.
No, I have not.
Why?
I didn't know we had one.
Oh, we dropped half of our motto.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
I don't know. I've been just noticing it, and then someone else actually pointed it out again, and I was like, someone else noticed it too.
Okay. Well, so... What part is dropped out?
Well, it now says live free.
That's it, huh?
That's
really?
It.
I never heard this was taken. Was this done by the legislature?
No, I don't think so.
How can you change a seal?
Well, I'm talking about on the government websites. If you
but
go
that
on
is
look.
A government website. We couldn't change anything on the county site because it was set in stone.
I'm not sure why it got changed.
Well, maybe somebody asked that. That's a big deal.
It is a
John
big deal.
John Stark wouldn't be too happy
right
now.
Well, you know, and most people don't realize what the entire saying is.
Yeah, right. Live free or die.
Because death is not the worst of all evils.
There you go.
There you go. So, yeah, we've learned a lot today with Barbara here on the show. And it should be an educational experience. In touch with Kale and Cormier. And any parting words, Barbara? You sure you don't want to announce your bid for re-election?
I want to see how the redistricting comes out first.
All right, but you'd win anyway.
Not necessarily. I mean, you don't know that.
She'll be back. Who's she kidding?
She's very modest.
That's okay.
She's
That's
very
good.
Modest. Well, Barbara Comtois from Sticks and Stones Farm in Center Barnstead. Yeah, it was a delight to have you with us today, and hope that you can join us again down the road.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to In Touch with Kale and Cormier right here, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com.